Item 4, as you know on the agenda, is not an action item. It's an informational item from CJR. All still presenting, Justice Dondero,
yeah.
Dr. Cowdery, and Kurt Child joining.
Thank you very much. Our next item deals with the restructuring that CJR has undergone over the past 3 years, both in terms of responding to the budget and staffing reductions and to issues raised by the SEC report. We felt it was the time now to come before the council and review the efforts that CJR has made to meet these demands and our experience of adjusting to them. We know from the video you've just seen that CJR has grown as its mission has developed over the past 4 decades. The submitted report you've gotten details this history and growth, so I will not repeat it in my remarks. More recently, CJR has had to make changes in the response to the present restrictions in court resources. This is an evolutionary process. The fiscal downturn, coupled with the SEC review and the directives of the council, has resulted in a significant restructuring at the CJR organization. This reformation has created important efficiencies in how CJR develops educational products and presents existing curriculum to new audiences. When the budget and staffing reductions impacted the educational program provided to appellate and trial courts, Dr. Cowdery and her fine staff worked with the governing committee to determine how to best absorb the reductions and what should be either canceled or postponed. Developing a 2-year education plan has certainly made this process easier to manage for Dr. Cowdery's staff and the CJR Governing Committee. The Council will soon review and hopefully approve the next 2-year education plan for the years 2014 to 2016. Kurt Child is here today, Chief of Operating Officer, and he'll provide information on some of the changes that have resulted from these Judicial Council directives. Kurt?
Thanks, Justice Dondero. As Justice Dondero took the opportunity to point out, over the course of the last few years, CJR has been undergoing some significant reorganization, some significant restructuring, and primarily due to budget reduction, some due to implementing the JC directives that have come down following the SEC. And otherwise, I think going beyond that, looking for a way to greater streamline services and create and find more efficiencies in the program. And I think if you take a look at Attachment A as well, you will see there that the organizational structure that now exists that office really is a quite transparent structure, and it's really focused clearly on all of the direct functions so that they're clearly identified, the direct functions that the office is performing. And certainly, I think to the office, to Diane and the office's credit, as she's worked with her staff on putting it together, it has certainly seemed to be functioning well and delivering as much as they can with the reduced services. Outlined in your report are the summaries of a few of the Judicial Council directives. I won't go through all of them, but just to mention a couple that have been implemented. And number 80 was an evaluation of the new judge education, which you approved at your last meeting. 82 was CCMS team, as you recall, provided an opportunity to move those staff and redeploy directly into into education. The same in 83, which was a reduction in production, delivery, and educational technology that actually ended up in a significant number of staff being redirected other places, both within CJR and outside CJR. There's been significant reductions in the course content and publications unit as well. So through that, I think there has been, again, some significant streamlining of their functions. One other note that I just want to make in reference to with the restructuring and the reorganizing within CGER, they've been working extraordinarily well, I think, with the other directors within the court operation division. And that's, I think, aided the entire division. The collaboration now that we're seeing happen between each of the directors are making each of our offices within our division, I think, stronger and better educated and better providers of services. Part of those have already been implemented. Plan on coming back with a set of those in the October council meeting to further lay those out for you. But one last thing before Diane gives you more detail. I just want to congratulate CGER, Diane, and all of her staff on the significant efforts that they make for this program every single day. They continue to provide quality programs in a world of reduced resources and in the midst of going through a challenging restructuring. They've been able to continue to ensure that quality services are delivered. And I really, now in my gig, over the course of almost a year, I've got to know her staff very well, and they really are genuinely committed providers, professional providers to judicial education, as you have all attested to that. And, of course, thanks to Justice Tondero and his leadership that he provides as chair of the Governance Committee. I think it's a very strong piece of AOC and the delivery of services as the branch as a whole. So with that, Diane, you can talk a little bit about the details.
Give some more details, and thank you. Thank you for that, Kurt. I was thinking what a nice thing it is to come and be a part of the 40th anniversary. It's just sort of coincidence that I was here. But then I thought, wait, I've been here the last 5 years, too, and gone through a lot of changes and difficulties, so it feels really it's a nice thing to have something really positive. So I'm just going to talk a little bit about some of the restructuring related to the reductions in staff, and I have a little graph here if I can get it up. I can push it harder. There we go. So this is just a summary of what is in the chart. I think it's attachment B and your materials. And this is a little bit of a graph to show the reductions that we've had in our staff. I note in the report that it's been reduced by 37%. I apologize, it's a 36% reduction. And our staffing reductions came about in a few different ways. Some of it was natural attrition, and then positions were eliminated. We had some people leaving from the voluntary separation program that we did two times here at the AOC. We also had to lay some people off. And then we also had some positions transferred to other parts of the administrative office of the courts. But overall, I think one of the goals has been to reduce the size of CGER. And as you can see, we've gone now from in June 2011 when we had 104 mm-hmm. people, not positions.
Yeah, that's there.
We're down to 67, I think, is the number. Is that right? I don't have it right in front of me. The other thing that we did is, and I think this graph shows it, is we had a number of temporary staff, 909 staff, and some of those are intermittent folks, which means they only work on an as-needed basis. And we converted all of those. That was another one of the directives from the SEC. So those are all converted to regular positions. So at this time, we don't have any 909 positions, any temporary positions. We also reduced the number of managers and supervisors. That was another issue that was raised in the report. We've gone from 15 to 12. We restructured some of the departments and units and tried to clarify their functions, and so we renamed them. And I do think that the result has been a more streamlined, smaller organization that's very clear about what its responsibilities are. There's two big units. One is about development, and one is about delivery. So I think it's really clear that, and those two units work very collaboratively together. The report also briefly notes some of the reductions, financial reductions, that CEJR has experienced during this same time period. And some of those reductions fueled some of the efficiencies, just like it had in the courts, that we achieved. And some of those efficiencies are noted in Attachment C. You know, we do talk about how we get the pressure of budget reductions to be more creative and to do things differently, and we've been no different. We've done a lot of that. It has impacted how we provide our education products, the number of live events that we do, and how frequently we do them. I think, as you all know, the major funding to support education comes from the previously the MOD Fund, now the Trial Court Improvement and Modernization Fund, and that has been reduced for CEJR for the past 5 years. It's been over 60% reduction for us, and we started in fiscal year 2009-10 at a budget of $3 million, and we're now $1.2 million, assuming you approve the budget, I think, tomorrow. Just as an example of how we did some of these reductions is we started early on to offer our institutes that used to be annual institutes for every subject matter area. Instead of doing them annually, we did them every other year. And what we did instead, because we wanted to make sure we could get that content out to people, is we started doing some of these smaller programs. Like Judge Herman just mentioned, we took courses to the courts. Of course, we couldn't take an institute, so we would typically do something that was a half day or a full day, and it could reach a smaller number of people because we don't have big conference centers all around the state, although that wouldn't be a bad idea. We would do them like 35 people, 40 people. So that was one of the ways that we tried to do things differently. We also, instead of having faculty in one location and bringing everyone to that location, we brought our faculty downstairs to the studio and we would videotape them. So we created a lot of videos that we could just post on Saranus and people were able to see, blank that out, at their leisure. Because CEJR has many options available to deliver education and an infrastructure to make that happen, we were able to make these changes. But I have to say the most important factor in doing that is the dedication of our staff, who care enormously about their service and providing the best education possible to judges and to court staff here in California. I can't stress enough how their dedication and service has made it possible for us to be this flexible and to adjust the way that we do our business. If you look in Attachment D, you'll see all the things that we were able to do in this fiscal year, which not as much as in previous years, but pretty, I think, respectable. We did 36 statewide programs, 38 regional and local programs, 14 video products, 18 new broadcasts, those are primarily for court staff, 6 video conferences, 11 WebEx programs, and we did 36 updates to our online courses, bench books, bench guides, and bench handbooks. So I'm going to do a little bit of a turn. I was asked to do include something about some of the issues related to hotel site selection. So I'm going to do that real briefly, if I can make sure I get this closed and opened. Okay. All right. So the process of obtaining lodging is done by the Conference and Registration Services Group, which is located within CEJR. They perform this work for all AOC. You don't have any materials in here. Sorry, it's just this PowerPoint. They perform that work for everyone here in the AOC, council, committees, all of our education programs, and they have the delegation authority from finance to manage this process. So I'm not going through all these steps. I'm just showing you these steps. This is a shortened version, 9 steps only, of a 35-step process. There's 2.5 people in the conference and registration services group that conduct all the solicitations for this these solicitations. We have about 75 that are conducted every year. Because this is a set process that really doesn't, we don't have any flexibility with it. It's the same process, whether it's a meeting for 40 people or be on the bench for hundreds and hundreds of people. It's a pretty set process. So a small program can take just as much time as a large program. And one of the issues that we've been experiencing, and I think this is why I was asked to report on this, is that we have a re-emerging economy where hotels are less interested in our business than they have been in the past. So we're getting fewer and fewer hotels that are bidding for business from us. A couple of examples, and this has been, there's been some criticism about it. A couple of examples was we had a primary assignment orientation in June of 2013. We didn't have any San Francisco hotels bid on that, so the only bidder was in Burlingame. So we had to shuttle our participants to Burlingame. We shortened the program a little and tried to make it as transparent and easy for folks, but, you know, that's not a great example for them to come have to be shuttled. In February 2012, we had no responses in San Francisco and had to go to a hotel outside of Sacramento to hold a program, another primary assignment orientation. But it's a little compounding because sometimes we will have... we'll find a date that works for hotels, and we'll have a bunch of bids, and then we'll have a group going to a really wonderful hotel, and it's just really a luck of the draw of those dates. And because we don't have the ability to communicate with hotels like we used to with the new contracting process, we don't really, it's just a shot in the dark. So I think that it's the August meeting, it's next week when the PJs and CEOs are meeting. We had a lot of bids for that. It just so happened that nobody was in San Francisco at that time, and we had a lot of bids. But it makes it difficult because an outsider will see judges getting shuttled to Burlingame. Doesn't look very good. And then, oh, well, the presiding judges get to stay in a really nice hotel. That is not anything that we can control. That is really about hotel availability. Fewer people are responding to our bids because there's reduced availability. They can get higher rates with other business, and there's more in competition. And that hurts us. You may or may not be aware that within the last few months, a hotel that typically council members would stay at, the Adagio, basically told our group they didn't want to do business with us anymore. They did some renovations. They could get a better clientele, better pay. That was bad for them. And so they're not interested in
more foot traffic.
That came out badly. And, of course, the other issue is that we have a very complex process that we are required to follow because of the contracting manual. It takes a long time. Some hotels don't want to deal with that. They don't have to deal with it, so they opt not to be included in our RFPs. We have a mandated evaluation process where the biggest driver is cost. So sometimes we just have to go to the cheapest one, and we don't have any flexibility with that. We've had some questions about why don't we hold more programs because of the issues with San Francisco and Los Angeles, and I'm just going to point out that some of the costs are higher if we were to go to Los Angeles. If we were going to a hotel there, we would have to pay higher costs for food and beverage. Usually it's 4 to 6 times what it costs for you to eat here. If we were to go to a hotel, we'd have to pay for meeting space. It's more expensive for the judges and participants here in Northern California to attend, and then there's more AOC cost staff travel. Conversely, the folks in Los Angeles or Southern California, it's less expensive for them, certainly. And the lodging costs are a little bit lower in that area than they are here in San Francisco. In Sacramento, in terms of holding programs there, just the downside, we've been experiencing fewer hotels are responding to our bids. So we'll put something out often statewide. I mean, that's how bad it is. We'll just say, anywhere in the state want to, you know, respond to our RFP, and we'll get very few bids in Sacramento for whatever reason. We've often used the space there, but it you know, it's got a size limitation, so we can't do a lot of our education programs there. And it is the same cost to do the food and beverage. It's very inexpensive, just like it is here. So that's just a quick FYI about the sort of the idiosyncrasies of where we are with lodging. But I think that there's been some criticism of that, and we wanted to make sure that you were aware of what the issues are. So I'll turn it back to Justice Dondero.
One quick question. Justice Hull, or Judge O'Malley, then yeah. Justice Hull.
I was just curious, Dr. Crowdery, when you talk about this process for the RFP, what is the amount of time that it takes? Because obviously if you get no bids, it's my understanding that sometimes you don't have time to put in another bid to complete the process to get another hotel.
Yeah,
I think you need to tell people how long it takes.
Yeah, sorry, it's in my notes and I missed it. It typically takes, well, I'd say the range is between 2.5 to 3 months typically, but it has taken up to 5 months for a single one. It's just a really long process, and it does make it harder if we don't get a bid and then we have to find a new location or a new set of dates. It's just really challenging that way for programs. Thank you.
Thank you, Chief, and Dr. Crowdery, Justice Dondero, everybody involved in CEJR. I'm not going to repeat all of the wonderful things that have already been said. I've admired your work from afar for quite a long time, and it really is impressive. And I just wanted to make one note concerning your information about the Adagio Hotel, having been one of those who stayed there, and paraphrasing, I think, Groucho Marx, it's okay with me because I don't want to stay in any hotel that would accept me as a guest.
Yeah, that's good. Okay. All right. Thank you very much, Diane, and Kurt, for your overviews and your comments. In summary, I would like to simply remind the council that the CEJR Board continues to maintain its core mission and the CEJR organization of providing high-quality education to the trial and the appellate courts of California. In large part, this work is naturally dependent upon the superior quality of the staff that works at CEJR. In particular, I would like to emphasize, as it's been said already today by others, the essential role played by the attorneys that work at CEJR. The CEJR publications are relied upon by judges throughout this state, and the scripts and the other procedural aids are routinely referenced by the bench officers. We know that anyone who has attended a CEJR program continues to use the materials prepared by the staff of CEJR long after the course is completed. Candidly, a number of faculty on our education program simply could not find the time to prepare these materials themselves, and they consequently rely on the staff attorneys at CEJR to do that work. Ladies and gentlemen, the bottom line is that the CEJR attorneys do the same work that research attorneys at the trial courts and the appellate branch experience daily. I speak for the entire governing committee when I share the concern of these attorneys that they not be reclassified as anything other than licensed attorneys. And I thank you for your time and attention.
Thank you. And I'm going to have Judge Darr speak in a moment, but I wanted to thank you for an extraordinary, renowned program. Thank you, Judge Darr.
Well, I had the privilege of serving for many years as a faculty member for CEJR at CJSPs, at institutes, and for 10 years taught the course in summary judgments at the Judicial College. In fact, that tenure ended about 8-9 years ago, so the judges who received my instruction are fully mature, and to the extent that the reversals on appeal of summary judgment orders appear to reflect poorly on CEJR, I have to take the hit for that myself. But it's been 25 years since I taught my first course, 1988 actually, and I learned only today that was the year of Judge Rubin's birth. So, so time has flown, and it's a great treat and it's a joy. And for those of you who have not taught, it's the frosting on the cake. There's one thing that we need to always bear in mind. With all the brilliant alternatives to face-to-face education, that CGER has developed and resorted to as the years have gone by and as the difficulties, the fiscal difficulties, have made greater and greater demands because, of course, the cost of face-to-face education is the most expensive. I don't think there's anyone who has served as faculty who would disagree with the proposition that face-to-face education is the highest quality education, and it's something to which we must obviously aspire as we seek to reinvest in our branch. And I, too, am grateful, ever so grateful, to the Governing Committee and to CGER for the fine work they've done. They've discharged their duties very well.
Thank you.
Thank you.